We know that more people are inside and they're going to be spending time together. So my message to people is pretty simple. Number one, get vaccinated. Number two, stay ventilated.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we speak with New York State Assemblyman John McDonald about the 2022 legislative session and much more. A new era is on the horizon at the state capitol in Albany, where Governor Kathy Hochul will oversee her first budget process in the new year. I've been speaking with state lawmakers about their expectations and their priorities. We'll be hearing those interviews over the next few episodes. We'll begin with my conversation with John McDonald. The pharmacist from Cohoes is a Democrat.
You know, it's going to be interesting. Governor Hochul will have the first opportunity to really publicly display her priorities. So we're kind of anxious to see what that's going to be. Personally, on my perspective, this is the first budget that I've been involved with in the last 10 years. We're not talking about deficits or future deficits. We're actually talking about surplus. So it speaks to wisely investing funds that may not be annually recurring into programs that are going to be transformational. Specifically here in the Capital Region, my hope is that we are able to come up with a program to help provide an opportunity for individuals who have been generational renters to become actually generational homeowners of properties, to build wealth, to build assets. I think that's something that is an opportunity to do something in partnership with the land banks, not only here in the Capital Region, but throughout the state, because it's an opportunity to change that conversation. We spend a large amount of time, and rightfully so, about talking about the high cost of rents and the challenges that landlords and tenants have. But we don't spend a lot of time focusing on the workforce. We don't spend a lot of time on helping individuals who have been basically challenged with paying rents for the rest of their life to actually take that rental payment and make it into a house payment and to build some equity.
Is the fact that there is historic federal infrastructure funding and also ARPA funding coming into states and communities, does that give the legislature a little more leverage in this legislative session than maybe it has in the past?
Well, I think overall, quite frankly, we have to look at, first of all, the executive. The governor has definitely demonstrated, both with small measures and large measures, that she wants to work with the legislature. So I think that discussion of leverage, we don't really need to focus on. We need to focus on making sure that all of our priorities are aligned. I do think, you know, we are in a unique situation where with the ARPA funds and with the infrastructure funds, we have an opportunity to really, for the next 5 to 10 years, establish programs not only to get more individuals who've been left out of the workforce to get into the workforce, but to have very good middle-class jobs. You know, whether it's roads and bridges, which is what the infrastructure projects funding is all about, or, you know, our other priority here in the Capital Region, which is what's going on in the Port of Albany with the wind manufacturing turbine facilities. There, we're talking 300 to 400 to 500 good middle-class careers, not just jobs for 3 to 5 years. We're talking about careers where individuals will be able to learn a trade, will be able to provide for their family, and yes, as I mentioned earlier, hopefully be able to buy their own home as opposed to being generational renters. So, you know, I think we're in a great spot. I know that there's going to be a lot of pressure to also catch up on many areas in human services where the prior governor did not really want to invest a lot of resources in that. You know, I'm speaking particularly in regards to home care and in regards to those individuals caring for vulnerable populations, whether it's those who are disabled, those who struggle with mental health or substance use. And we need to have that conversation. We need to make sure that we strengthen and fortify that workforce, because the reality is this: we can't expect individuals who are vulnerable to survive unless they have a workforce behind them that can help them do their job and help guide them in the right direction.
You recently endorsed Governor Hochul for a full term, and based on what you've said so far, it sounds like you're pretty positive about the performance she's had so far.
You know, unlike some of the past governors, you know, when you look at whether it's former Governor Cuomo or Spitzer, or even Patterson, for that matter, Kathy Hochul actually has some similarities to George Pataki. She started at the local level. And I've, being one who started at the local level, believe that, you know, that those lessons you learn dealing with people at the street level, at local government, carry forward with you on how you work with legislators. So I really think her local government background is helpful. I also think that short time in Congress is helpful because you get to see, you know, people tend to forget this because they look at federal, state, and local as all separate. Quite frankly, there's a symbiotic relationship. And I think what Kathy Hochul is recognizing is that relationship needs to be strengthened and fortified. And let's face it, a lot of resources come from the federal government. We thank our federal partners, but it's critical for us to make sure we spend them wisely on what the concerns are of the people.
You've been chairing the Committee on Oversight, Analysis, and Investigation. And clearly, with the upheaval in Albany over the past year, you know, a change of administration and a lot of focus on either alleged or confirmed wrongdoing within the executive branch. Is that something you'll be taking up a renewed focus in that area in the new year, just in terms of government operations and how things are working in Albany?
Yeah, absolutely. I know, as you know, myself, the chair of Aging and Health, played a very large role in regards to hearings. She's back in August of 2020 that really brought to light a lot of the questions that people were asking about. And, you know, this led to a lot of different, as you would say, reports being issued by many different entities. And that's where we are today. But I think, you know, like anything else, government continues to need to find better ways to operate. We're looking at where we can, you know, address barriers and remove them. And make it more streamlined to address the people's concerns.
I want to ask you about some of the other hot, you know, button issues that have come up,
yeah.
At least previewing 2022. It's going to be an election year, and Republicans, you know, since the measures were approved, have been beating the drum for some sort of changes to the bail reform laws previously approved. What would you like to see?
So, you know, bail reform is a very interesting topic. If you listen to everybody, no one disagrees with the principle that you should not be sitting in jail because you're poor. You know, the challenge is really getting to the meat and potatoes of the issue. You know, unfortunately, there are individuals that like to fan the fire, and they basically blame the sun, a cloudy day, for bail reform. They blame the rain on bail reform. And that's really mischaracterizing the issue. Where I think we have really done a disservice to everybody, whether it's the individuals being arrested or it's the society at all, and particularly the victims who people tend to forget about in these situations. You know, we had a process in place that worked very well, particularly for individuals who are struggling with mental health and substance use issues. That process has been decimated. It's been removed. You know, I always made it a point to go to Albany and Troy City Court for their drug court graduation events. Truly some of the most meaningful events, as you see individuals who have really remarkably turned their lives around. In talking to those courts of recent, there are hardly any individuals in the programs. And the reality is this. When bail reform was discussed, and David Soares was a very loud voice on this, and David was not wrong on this.
And he's the Albany County DA.
The Albany County District Attorney. They were saying, listen, we understand the principles of bail reform, but you need to have pretrial detention services in place because there are individuals who come in, they commit repeated offenses time after time after time, sometimes multiple times in the day, definitely multiple times in the week. In most circumstances, they're what's considered, at least from the healthcare profession, as they're hot. Something's going on. They're either having a mental health breakdown, they're on a bad ride on substance use, whatever it may be. The reality is, we're doing them no service, nor are we doing the public at large any service by allowing those individuals to continue to go into their tailspin and commit repeat offenses. I don't care if it's they're stealing cars or they're stealing a six-pack of soda. The reality is repeated offenses need to be stopped. The problem is we have these conversations about dangerousness, and that automatically turns off many of my colleagues in the assembly because that argument was always used as suppression against the Black and minority community in the past. So therefore, we need to really have a fact-based discussion on what are the issues out there, where are we stepping up short. I contest, and this is talking to police chiefs and district attorneys and sheriffs, not only in the Capital Region, but throughout the state, that if we make some modifications in regards to pretrial services for individuals with behavioral health and substance use issues who are committing these repeated offenses, I think we're going to make a big difference. You know, at the end of the day, there's no doubt about it. And yes, it's my colleagues on the Republican side who have been pretty much banging the drum, but we've expressed concerns too. But we can't mischaracterize this issue, because at the end of the day, the guiding principle is, number one, no matter who you are, no matter what political party you belong to, you're innocent until proven guilty. I think we can agree on that. That's actually in the Constitution. And number two, just because someone doesn't have the resources and is arrested for a crime, whereas somebody who has resources and is arrested for the same crime, neither of those individuals should be sitting in that jail cell. The individual doesn't have the resources, shouldn't be sitting there. If you're poor, it doesn't mean you should be in jail. Plain and simple.
Do you have enough Democratic votes in the legislature, where Democrats are overwhelmingly in control over the Republicans, to get the kind of reform you're talking about in the next year?
You know, at this stage of the game, I don't know. I think it's a discussion. I know that in my conversations with individuals in the executive chamber, you know, I've asked that they do a very deep dive into regards to statistics. Let the facts speak first. And then, you know, when facts are there, you can't ignore them. And I think that's an opportunity. I think the other thing that's going to be helpful this year, there's a new mayor in New York City who takes over on January 1st, Eric Adams. And he's indicated that there are issues as well with this. And quite frankly, I think the legislature would be considered tone deaf if we did not look at the results of the November 2021 elections this past month. There is definitely, and every single poll, every different conversation, the public, whether they are unsafe or not, the whole different ballgame, but the perception is they feel unsafe. We can't ignore that. And we need to look at issues such as bail as where we can do better and make sure we stick to the guiding principles.
I always like to catch up with you about the state of the pandemic, because you work in a pharmacy and you have kind of a front row view of some of the challenges that the country's facing right now. Number one, is Governor Hochul doing a good job in managing the pandemic? Do you think the mask or vaccine mandate she established is a good idea? Is it working?
I do think she's doing a good job. Now, let's take both issues separately. The vaccine mandate that she's talked about, dealing with primarily with healthcare workers, makes perfect sense. And I'm not a fan of mandates, I'll be honest with you. But in situations where healthcare professionals who knowingly know that vaccination is a part of their healthcare profession are going to be working within inches of individuals who are vulnerable, we need to take those aggressive steps to protect them. In regards to the mask mandate, you know, the interesting part is she issued that really as a strong guidance. The reality is the counties have the ability to decide to what level enforcement is going to be. I do think the masks make a difference. I know there are a lot of people out there who want to get into the inner details. I kind of keep it simple. The bottom line is we were all brought up that if someone's wearing a mask, you don't run to, you step back a little bit. And a little distance between all of us is basically the principle we've been bestowing for a long period of time, is physical distancing. You know, do I like the fact that, you know, there are changes now when you go to the gym? No, I don't think I do. Not many people do. On the other hand, you know, how many lives need to be lost throughout this country? 800,000 and counting. Probably will eclipse 1 million by the end of this winter. COVID's real. We need to be very clear about it. The governor's done a wonderful job of really trying to encourage people to get vaccinated, and has really opened up a lot of those opportunities again for people, so that excuse of access to care is not going to be the excuse. So I do think we're moving in the right direction, but let's all be very mindful of the fact, and we are going into a very, very dark period now in regards to light of day, but also the fact that we know that more people are inside and they're going to be spending time together. So my message to people is pretty simple. Number one, get vaccinated. Number two, stay ventilated. Open the windows 1 or 2 inches to get some fresh air exchanges into the house. That is arguably the second biggest defense to preventing the virus from having an impact in your household or where you're at. And number three, visit safely. If you don't feel well, if you're sick, send a text, send an email, send a Hallmark e-greeting card, but stay home. Don't don't embrace people when you're not feeling well. As much as the selfish motive is to be with them, if you really love the people you're visiting, don't visit.
There's 50 million Americans who haven't been vaccinated. Even now, a year into the wide and free availability of the shots, you know, is it possible to even get the numbers up to where they need to be, where something like Omicron isn't the acute concern it is? You know, right now, public health officials are warning of a very dark few weeks ahead of us.
Yeah. You know, Omicron, it's gonna be interesting. And as I've said to many individuals, I think we're still a good 2-3 weeks away before we know the full impact. Mm. And you're getting varying reports, whether you're looking at what's happening here in the United States, but what's happening in Europe. Yes, it moves very quickly. Its transmittability is very high. Once again, though, the good news, if there's good news, is that its impact on overall health is not as great as the prior variant. So I think we need to keep that in mind. You know, the vaccination part is very interesting. I strongly encourage vaccination. I have been out vaccinating. A lot of my volunteer time is spent particularly in the underserved areas in Albany and Troy and underserved communities. And you know, I have to tell you, the individuals who are getting vaccinated are only going there because they have a trusted source. And believe it or not, it's not me. You know, it's usually somebody who is Hispanic or somebody who is Black, who is a leader in that community that is encouraging people to get vaccinated. And they're fine once they get it. But it also speaks to the fact that many of our individuals in this state and in this country are disconnected to the healthcare system. They don't even know where to go. So this is not even top of mind. They don't understand the basic principles of preventative health in many circumstances. And that's really a sad mark on where we are in regards to healthcare literacy. So, you know, there are people who are just never going to want to get vaccinated. Trust me, I know who they are. I get emails by the hundreds. I'm on a health committee in the state assembly, so I get a large amount of emails about that. And I get it. And I actually spend time, even if they're not constituents, responding to them to say, listen, I get it. You know, you're worried about being dragged out of your home and stuck with a needle. I don't support that either. You know, mandating it in the general population, I do not think we're at that point by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think there are a little bit of the population, they will get vaccinated, but it's not going to be as incremental as we'd like. And, you know, I'll give you a good example. You know, I've been in pharmacy for 35 years. I have people that I remember when they were on chewable fluoride, and now they're adults living their life. And I remember sitting down and, you know, right now, the last 2 months when people are getting their first dose, I thank them for getting their first dose. And as I'm talking to them to get them distracted from the needle, I say, so why? Why now? And she goes, well, my sister's sick. And the doctor told me I can't be with her during this time of chemotherapy unless I'm vaccinated. So I'm doing it for her. And, you know, I'm hearing those stories time after time after time. So like anything else, when it comes to healthcare, it's personal. And basically people availing themselves to the resources, it's going to be personal. And there's going to be a lot of those personal stories out there that are going to make that difference.
Okay, one last thing. We're talking a year from now after the election. Is there any doubt in your mind that Democrats will retain control of the legislature and Kathy Hochul will have defeated her Republican opponent, likely to be Lee Zeldin?
I do believe that the Assembly and the Senate will maintain a Democratic majority, and I firmly believe that Kathy Hochul will be the first officially elected New York State governor. Woman governor in the state of New York. I'm very confident in that.
New York State Assemblyman John McDonald is a Democrat from the 108th District. Assemblyman McDonald, thanks as always for your time, and we'll be watching in the new year.
Thanks, Ian. Have a great day, and Happy New Year.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.